Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 141. I'm your host John Jordan, and I'm very pleased joining me today we have a Michael Wagner from Star Atlas. How's it going, Michael?
Hey John, it's going great. Great to be back on the show.
Yes. Michael has done so many interviews, he forgot that I interviewed him. Although I did interview him a long time ago, we were just discussing, he couldn't even quite remember back to May 2021, which we did our first intro to Star Atlas.
In fairness, I recognized your face as soon as we jumped on. Yeah, but it has been a while. It's been a couple of years. Feels like a lifetime. But yeah,
and you, happy to be here. How many podcasts have you done in that time? I mean, probably hundreds, I would think.
Yeah, over 100 for sure. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. But it's been exciting with a lot of ups and downs.
Is that the term you use? Okay, so just to set the scene for why I want to do this podcast. And if you don't like that, then don't listen to it. We're not really talking about the past. I think Michael has done a lot of that. He's been sort of pretty open with sort of what's happened to the project. And, to some degree, every blockchain game has gone through a similar trajectory. So we're not going to go into any of that sort of stuff. We're really looking forward to sort of what is happening now with Star Atlas as a project. And so that's what we're going to focus on. If you don't like that, don't listen to it. come back next episode. But just to sort of cut that off a little bit, you've really gone through a difficult time in the last getting on for a year now. Had to make a lot of changes. And just to sort of wonder, when we first spoke 2 years ago, you clearly had this very strong vision in your head for what you wanted to do. And that was really, I guess, that ambition was something that really propelled Star Atlas as a project in the blockchain game space, where many other games were more focused on doing something this year. And you've had a long-term vision for this big sort of space sort of simulator type thing. But, from what you've gone through in the last year, was there any point when you just thought this is just not worth the hassle anymore on a can we even do it obviously on the personal level? You've gone through a lot. Did you ever get to that stage, or is are you diamond hands?
To that I would just say definitive no. At no point did I ever think of giving up. If anything, with the challenges, with the obstacles, it only fortified my intensity in being able to execute on this vision. And the vision really hasn't, it hasn't changed. It certainly hasn't gotten smaller. If anything, we've probably broadened the scope of what's possible as we explore the tech and actually deploy and deliver on various features and products. So, I very much have the endurance athlete mentality. For years, I raced triathlon, rode bicycles, and ran, swam, et cetera. But through that, I think the mentality that I formed was one of one foot in front of the other. You just keep going. You'll get to the end of the race eventually. You just need to keep going, and it might hurt along the way. But I think David Goggins has a quote. He says, pain is temporary, failure's forever. And it's something that I really align with.
Okay, cool. Good. So what's going on then? So Star Atlas, the vision's still there, and you are, you've downsized the team a lot, which to a degree has sort of restricted what you can do in the short and medium term, I guess. But you are actually seem to be pretty active in stuff that is sort of planned and shipping and playable. So take us through where we are at the moment.
Sure. And maybe for some of the audience that just isn't as familiar, I personally think of Star Atlas as more than just a gaming product. We are a platform. We're a development ecosystem. We have this deep philosophy of on-chain game logic, and the purpose of that is this idea of composability. So we're creating a platform that other people can integrate into. They can build their own services, their own dApps, their own gaming applications, and they can leverage not only our blockchain primitives and the tech that we've developed, but also gaming assets and art that we've released. Now, our core focus is on a set of gaming environments that all tie into this one product that is called Star Atlas. And so we build our flagship AAA product in Unreal Engine 5, and that's the open world space exploration MMO. We have a browser-based game that we call Star Atlas Golden Era. And this is more of a top-down real-time strategy MMO, and it focuses on territory control, star-based crafting and construction, combat, and it has some deep loops around resource extraction, crafting systems, and logistics. And then in addition to that, we also have a mobile companion app, and we just revealed this on July 24th back at the PlayGG event. The mobile companion app is a fitness trainer, and the way it ties into the rest of the gaming products is that people may have heard of something, a product like Steppin, for example, or Move to Earn. In our case, this isn't Move to Earn, but Move to Progress. So as you go on a walk, a run, a bicycle ride, you're leveling up one of your crew members. And the crew member in the mobile app slots into your ships in the ship configuration process in both the browser game and in the Unreal Engine client. And you know, when I said we don't have multiple products, we have a single product. It is Star Atlas. And because we're leveraging Solana as this underlying backend infrastructure for the game logic, we actually have the ability to synchronize events across all of those different environments. So you're not playing a different game when you play Sage. You're just experiencing it through a different environment. So those are the core products that we're working on today. There's a lot more ancillary services that are all tied into the economy and into governance. But let me pause there for now. We have some really exciting stuff I can talk about that's up and coming in the very near future here.
And when you talk about sort of composability, I mean, one of the sort of aspects of Star Atlas, I mean, obviously, probably there were a few games on Solana that sort of caught the eye, but your sort of rise was sort of coexisting with that of Solana, and you sold a lot of NFTs, and obviously these games are the first sort of not the first, but the first sort of on chain activity people can do with those NFTs. That's correct. So the mobile app is called Crew, I think it's called. So that's specifically for the Crew NFT, and then the Sage one is for the ships, and you're sort of building up.
So maybe just to expand on that idea again of composability, and maybe even defining the category of Web3 gaming, because there's a lot of different ways you can engage in quote unquote Web3 game development. The simplest path and what we've seen most prominently is people releasing NFTs and then finding a way to integrate those NFTs into their game. In many cases, there's really not any on-chain actions that are taken. And in fact, it's once you own the NFT, it is kind of your access point into the game. But those games are built in a completely traditional fashion. So it's all Web 2 development. Once you own the NFT, maybe you can trade that, but otherwise you use that to get access to the game. If you were to extend that to slightly enhanced Web 3 integration, it would be doing things like minting in-game currency tokens, as well as the governance tokens. So we've done that with Atlas and Polis. And then the third part, and this is where we lie, is in this idea, again, of on-chain game logic. So within that Sage application, for example, we have a product coming out that we're calling Sage Labs. And this focuses heavily on the resource extraction and crafting gameplay loop. And things like entry into the game, you create a profile on chain. So in the future, your character progression and account management is on chain. The fleet management program, movement and coordinate systems, inventory management, when you're actually extracting resources, putting those into crafting recipes and crafting items and the output you get, those are all programs that live on Solana. And we're also releasing the IDLs and the documentation so other developers can then integrate directly into that game logic. It's not hosted on a server somewhere. It's hosted on Solana, and Solana is the server. And that's where I think there's this massive potential in being able to create an ecosystem that can be co-developed and co-created by people all over the world.
And why do you think that's important? Because for me, sort of over the last sort of certainly year, we've There's always been a spectrum of sort of, you know, fully on-chain games and then whatever we call them, Web 2.5 or Web 2.1 or something like that. But I think we've seen, as things like App Store sort of open up, I've seen sort of the move has sort of been towards less on-chain stuff and making it easy for people. You know, there are some still really interesting stuff going on with the fully on-chain stuff, but that's very much in its own sort of slightly sort of geeky space now. And you're, you know, clearly, I would say I wouldn't characterize Star Atlas as being in that sort of geeky sort of on-chain space. So what do you think you're getting from on-chain, or being as on-chain as you are, because clearly it does present some difficulties in onboarding to a mass market.
It does. It does. In the words of JFK, we do these things not because they're easy, but because they're hard. It is incredibly challenging. We're working at the bleeding edge of tech, not only in, you know, Unreal Engine, always using the latest version of that, incorporating all of those features, building a business from the ground up, and then working in the blockchain space, and also pioneering this idea of on-chain game development. To me, this represents a transition from the model of business consumer to, again, co-creator of this universe that we've outlined, this vision that we've outlined. You yourself noted that it's quite an ambitious vision. You know, we do intend for Star Atlas to be a live service game to get frequent updates and get patches and new content. But the benefit is in this open architecture is that anybody is able to build their own content and monetize that as well. I think of it as very much synergistic. So from our perspective at Automata, the studio building Star Atlas today, if someone else builds content, that's content that we didn't have to create. That actually adds value to the current user base. So the users, our existing users, win from this new content. We as a studio win because we didn't have to spend the time or resources to create it. And the developer of that content also wins because they can find a path to monetize this through transaction fees or some type of on-chain activity or some other requirement that they implement to get access to their specific content. And that's just one example, but the, you know, the idea of being able to modify or create your own levels, create your own maps, and give people access to that is not a new idea. In fact, you know, Counter-Strike is one of the most popular games of all time, and it came as a mod for Half-Life. So we see enormous potential in this co-creation. And then if I would point to things, other applications more specific to the crypto space, things like DeFi, for example, that is a massive opportunity. And what I'm looking forward to is seeing someone create a lending or scholarship program within our environment. So once again, not a program that we have to build. They can create their experience where if somebody owns a ship and they don't have the time or the interest in actually leveraging that asset, they can lend that out to someone else who does want to play with the asset. And so it creates these labor markets and efficiency of capital where maybe you can't afford a $100,000 ship, which we're selling. We know that's a very expensive asset. Most gamers are not ever going to buy that. But if they could rent that or rev share that asset by borrowing it on some marketplace and then using it in the game, they still get to experience the game. And that's just one example. But there's myriad different development opportunities. And my goal with Star Atlas is to create something that ultimately has a perpetual life cycle. And that's impossible for any company ever to accomplish. It's through time, it's through this transition of intellectual property into the DAO and the ownership of the idea of Star Atlas by the people that are participating in it, that this thing can continuously evolve into the future. New studios will take it over and build future experiences for this. So that's not to downplay our effort today. We're very much focused on building the game ourselves and making sure it's a phenomenal game, because ultimately what I'm proposing only is a value proposition to the extent that we're able to attract the initial users to the ecosystem. Then it becomes a big opportunity. You have a captive audience that you can build something for and monetize.
But that's even sort of coming back to the vision thing. That's extending the vision even beyond, you know, the game, which is obviously in some ways great. But obviously, you end up in that sort of platform thing. You always end up with a chicken and egg, don't you? So yes, if you have a big successful product with lots of audience, then there's lots of ways you can sort of, you know, monetize that or use that. But you have to. But if you don't have that, then there's no way you get to that sort of platform thing. So I guess the sort of question for this is how, you know, what game, what entertainment do you have to provide in order to get, you know, sufficient takeoff to make it a platform? You know, and if you look at something like Roblox, you can see maybe, I mean, that wasn't a game, but it was a platform for that. Actually, the quality of the games don't really matter. I mean, obviously that's different. It's not a blockchain, it's not composable, but do you think your progress would be easier if maybe Star Atlas was a slightly sort of cut down version of not being a Unreal 5 3D space game, you know?
there are 100% easier ways to build Star Atlas than the way that we're building it. Could be argued that it would be slightly quicker to develop, but we really do, the way our team is structured, we have specialists on different aspects, right? So the team that we have that's working in Unreal Engine, for example, some, you know, 45 people or so today, including the co-creation studios that we engage with. The fact that we're doing blockchain work right now in our browser-based application does not slow them down. In fact, they're moving at an incredible pace. They've accomplished so much already in what is a short time frame. Maybe to expand on what's coming in the Unreal Engine product, the this immersive world. We've been doing a lot of foundational work on content creation pipelines and building out asset libraries, making everything custom and unique to Star Atlas and implementing all of these models into the game. And you know, part of that is also defining things like combat and ship physics and movement and animations. And so we released back in 2022 the first version of our Unreal product, which we call the Showroom, and that's on Epic Game Store. Anybody can go download that today. You do need a game access key, but join our Discord, we can get you a game access key. But for what we're calling the R2.2 release, a couple of very exciting things. The gameplay mode, which is a complete gameplay loop, is competitive combat racing. I would say this is analogous to like a pod racing or maybe a Mario Kart. There are boosts and level ups and things you can pick up on the course. You can attack other ships, and this is full multiplayer support, and you can compete in tournaments. And then through that, you're also able to level up your ship through ship mastery, customize components, configure different items in there, change out your crew member, and level all of those up as well. And this is coupled with a partnership that we announced again just a couple months ago with Metagravity. And Metagravity is this user concurrency backend infrastructure and server that's going to enable the multiplayer support, but also enable large scale user concurrency. In our testing, we've already accomplished 5,000 users in a single instance. By the end of the year, we're targeting 30,000 users in a single instance. And for especially for a game that is as graphically intense and beautiful as Star Atlas, this is a massive accomplishment. In fact, nobody's ever demonstrated 30,000 users in a single instance before, and the tech appears to be working right now. Now, what does that do? Well, it provides real agency to all of the players in the game. You know, things that are happening on a distant planet somewhere are not instanced out. They're reflected for all players in the game. So we don't need multiple servers. You don't need to make sure you join the same server as a friend of yours. When you're moving off planet, for example, you can fly through the atmosphere into outer space. And when you're on a central space station, you can see thousands of other players, real players, running around and interact with them. So it provides the social element of that. So In my opinion, and in the team's opinion, this is the first complete gameplay loop that will really retain, not only attract, but retain users, because there is something that they can compete in and get that sense of progression and leveling and also earnings, Atlas earnings, through participation in these events. So we're targeting end of the year for that. And I think that's, again, a major milestone for our business. And I think a point of inflection for us where we'll start to see some major adoption.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do you see, obviously, you know, I'm sure the comparison's been given to you lots of times. What you're trying to build in terms of what you're trying to build as a product, you know, it's something like Star Citizen is sort of a obvious comparison, not blockchain at all, but obviously tremendously successful. And it's sort of interesting that there are obviously another, you know, EVE Online. I mean, they're the sort of three. You and those two are the sort of the three games sort of jump out at you. Maybe they're doing something sort of differently, maybe not. But it's sort of a, in some ways, those are sort of signature products. But actually, the sort of actual market for them is not enormous. So, do you think that sort of the game that Star Atlas as the game and the things you can do in that is is that sufficiently appealing to a mass market audience, or do you think you don't need a mass market audience, you just need a big enough audience? So obviously, you know, compared to like, you know, people playing these sort of games compared to people playing Counter-Strike, there's probably a factor of, you know, 10 times difference in terms of shooters. And so you've got these big ambitious plans, but maybe is there just an audience who, aside from blockchain, who this sort of thing would appeal to?
So it's a good question. I would say Star Atlas is a combination of maybe Star Citizen, space simulation tech, and the economy of EVE Online. So this deeply complex supply chain management and economic gameplay loop. The benefit that we have is, and the benefit from building anything in Web3 is that we have a legitimate financial system behind all of this, a real economy, a real opportunity to generate income for yourself and exchange assets with other players that have monetary value. And so when I think about the demographics of people that are interested in participating in Star Atlas, it's not just the space sim gamer. Like, we certainly have an objective to target the mainstream audience at some point in time, especially as we flush out more of the game development where we have the features that are attractive to them. But in the meantime, you have two other major segments, one of those being this play to earn audience. So people who are more extractive mentality, they want to come in, they want to earn money from their gameplay.
Does that still exist? isn't the lesson of the last 18 months that's maybe an audience we don't want, or features we don't want because...
I have been screaming from the rooftops that play to earn is not dead. Play to earn is still extremely viable.
You're the one true voice in there.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that'll prove to be true, especially as we go forward. So the challenges that teams have faced in the past is that they just didn't sufficiently develop a sustainable economy. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but just to go deeper into that, the economy cannot and should not function purely based off of the inflationary emission curve. So, you know, the fact that we can distribute tokens to players for gameplay is great for as a bootstrapping mechanism. But the way that you create an economy that actually functions long term is really more of a producer consumer peer-to-peer exchange. And so it's because players can come in to say Sage and produce resources and components and then sell those to other players who are mostly interested in say the racing gameplay loop where they can earn some value by through these competitions. They don't want to go do all of the resource extraction, crafting, and build their own components. They just want to buy that from someone else. And so there are people who will come into the game, create those, and sell those to other players. I could extend that to the very first UGC that we're going to introduce, which leverages those same resources to craft skins. And the rarity or the uniqueness of a skin is going to be determined by the rarity and uniqueness of the resources that you've extracted. So a person, an artist, could come into Star Atlas and have no interest in playing the game, but they see a business opportunity, and it's they're buying resources from other players who have extracted them. They're creating these beautiful skins, and then they're selling that on the marketplace to other players. So it's not, you know, it's not just about the gamers. So you have this play to earn audience, again, extractive mentality, but from my perspective, the way that they monetize their time in the future is not because we're emitting tokens out and giving it to them. It's because they create some business model where they exchange value with other players. And then of course you have this trader.
So there's basically, you're saying sort of the problem with the play to earn as it was it was a sort of a preset model where you, there's a specific thing that the developer said you did or designed a game that you sort of did, and then you did it. But with, you're saying it will work when there is basically a economic system and people work out what they want to do. Is that sort of the,
it's exactly
why,
right.
why you think it's different?
That's right. Deep levels, deep layers of complexity across the game. So you can determine how deep do you want to go? Do you want to be looking at spreadsheets all day? This is a lot of the EVE Online gamers. They're looking at spreadsheets and looking at price disparity between places in space. The fact, again, that we have coordinates and movement all on chain means there's a real economic cost to transporting items. It's not instantly transported. You actually have to take your ship from one point to another, and that costs you resources. You burn food and fuel and ammunition and toolkits along the way. So arbitrage might exist, and some people are going out and taking advantage of arbitrage by flying their ship to one space station, buying up some resources, and selling it on another space station.
Okay.
So to me, this is all incredibly cool. It's very nerdy, but I think it's all incredibly cool. But it does create a true economy through commerce, again, peer-to-peer commerce.
Mm.
Now, the third segment is debatable if it's, you know, a gamer audience, but it is the trader and speculator. It's people who will just buy ships from us, for example, because a lending model exists. And you could think of this almost as, you know, same type of passive income stream that real estate would provide to you, except all done programmatically and all digitally. And so instead of buying a house for $100,000, you buy a commander ship and then lease that out or rent that out to another player. And that is a recurring revenue stream for that individual. So there's a very wide audience. And then there's all of the developers who can build these services on top of it. Mm. So the gamer audience is incredibly important. Again, without the gamer audience, all of these other things kind of fall apart. But we're building the core gameplay loops in a modular fashion today that they're working. Like, we're already growing. We already have some 10,000 daily active users through interactions with various programs that we've deployed. If you look at EVE Online, for example, longest running MMO to date, I think they have something like 20,000 daily active users. It could be wrong, but I think that's pretty close. And so, you know, for us to go from 10,000 to 20,000 daily active users when we have major product releases coming up in Q4, I don't think that's a difficult objective for us to hit.
Mm-hmm. And of course, just for reference, EVE Online is doing a blockchain game based in the EVE universe as well. So that'll be there's more competition, or whether that's proving your visionary stance on that.
I'm really curious to see where they go with it, by the way. I'm a fan of EVE Online. I'm also a fan of Star Citizen. I mean, to me, this with the on-chain development, you get the composability, you also get interoperability. I don't think of them necessarily as competitors, but as potential partners at some point down the line.
Yeah. Cool. So I think, you know, broadly the concept you're talking about, I you know, probably everyone in, not everyone, but a lot of people in blockchain would agree with. If you can sort of get a open economy going, then, you know, if it's sort of sustained enough, you can sort of have these emergent sort of properties going on there. Clearly, you know, over the last year, what you've seen and what every blockchain game has seen is probably its token prices are down, you know, 99%, 95%, you know, everything. So given that we have this sort of concept of how these economies sort of could work in some magical point in the future, and we've seen the value of economies drop 99%. Should that be a warning for us that actually we need to be a bit more careful about open economies? And, you know, again, the other big trend I've sort of seen from any game that has a sort of a play to earn like component is now, they may be giving away tokens every day, but basically they're doing that. They're having a fixed amount of tokens based on your position in a leaderboard. So they know exactly how many tokens they're giving away. And then people just fight within the leaderboard for better positions. I mean, isn't what you're doing sort of the exact opposite of what we're now seeing most people doing?
Well, I think there's two points there. So the starting with the token distributions, again, it obviously you have to create utility and demand and value for the tokens that you're distributing.
It needs the value, isn't it? That's the...
There has to be some use case beyond, hey, we're going to pay these out to you, and then, you know, your next action is to go sell them or convert them to USD or Bitcoin or whatever, right? If that's the only function of the currency, then yeah, there's only one way it can go, which is down through time. But to the extent that we've got all these programs that like lockers that provide incentives on the marketplace, as well as the full in-game economy being denominated completely in Atlas, and these resource sinks. And my vision here, my ambition is to have people perceive Atlas as a currency for what it is, as a medium of exchange. And I've often referenced, you know, like your salary, for example. If you're employed by somebody and you're getting paid a salary, and maybe that salary is USD, you know, when you get your paycheck, you're not immediately thinking, hey, I need to convert this into the British pound or into the euro or Canadian dollar, you're thinking, hey, I'm going to deposit this in my bank account and I'm going to be able to do stuff with this, buy things with this in the future. Mm-hmm. That's the mental framework I ultimately want to achieve with Star Atlas. So purchasing power with Atlas. Maybe again, just a quick tangent, but one of the other things that we've already done is launched a build program. There's some 50 companies that have applied to this. Okay. And the build program is a repository of Star Atlas IP, branding assets, as well as some digital art. Some of our spaceships, for example, are included in this repository. People are able to create businesses and they owe zero rev share to us for the first $1 million in revenue, gross revenue that they generate. There are businesses like Gallia Merchants out there, Enigma 42, Gallia Art Station, and Star Artisan Shop. These are just a few that are on the top of my head, but they're producing Star Atlas merchandise, apparel, computer peripherals, 3D models of our ships. They're selling placards and jewelry and like all of these different products that are branded with Star Atlas and making money off of it. One of the requirements there is that they have to accept Atlas as a form of payment, not the exclusive form, but as a form of payment. So you're able to purchase real world goods with this digital currency that is primarily an in-game currency. But just a couple of examples of how building utility and value in the game currency, it doesn't necessarily mean or in fact is contra to the idea of, hey, we're just going to distribute tokens and that's how you get paid and we're paying you to play, but then you just go sell them. Like that's the one-way path that is only down. And I'm blanking on your second question. If you can remind me the second part of that.
I'm blanking on it as well. No, I think we just say if an economy drops 99%, then no matter what concepts you have, but
So it, you actually just reminded me. So it's economies dropping 99% by and large in this cycle are due to market correlation. Now there is a point in time where a product like Star Atlas or a Web3 game will decouple from the broad market, but given early stage development, you know, when it's lacking in features and lacking in substantial content, then sure, the game tokens and the governance token will trade in line with the rest of the market. And, you know, what we've seen is everything down essentially 99% from the bull market that was 2021. These things will come back as well, and you'll see a rise in value in all of these tokens again at some point in the future. That's not what we look for, though. I mean, of course, it's great when everything's going up that our tokens go up as well, but we need to build the fundamental value into the assets first. And we do that by building a great product that people want to use. And when the mainstream gamers come in, they're going to care far less about what's going on in the crypto markets and care a lot about what's going on in the game that they're playing, the features they have access to, and the value of the assets that they're earning through gameplay.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, sort of as part of that, as we sort of mentioned, you were very coupled to Solana, which had a particularly jumpy sort of last sort of 18 months. I mean, we've seen some Solana products leave Solana. We've seen quite a lot of them go cross chain. You seem like you're pretty nailed down to Solana as a base chain.
We are diehard Solana. Yeah. There's a marketing campaign right now only possible on Solana. We've been saying this for a year and a half now. You know, the things that we're doing with the on-chain game logic, they're really only possible with the state machine that is Solana. Just speed and cost and scalability. So not to mention all of the work that we do building out these programs would need to be replicated on some other chain and some other code base and some other language probably. Right. So for us, we don't see any bandwidth constraints operating exclusively on Solana. And sure, we could launch something on another chain with the ambition of attracting users from those ecosystems. But I don't think that that's a necessary tactic for us. I think the products are going to speak for themselves. We'll get people onto Solana to play Star Atlas, and we want to focus all of our energy building here.
Okay. So you sort of mentioned a few sort of products and stuff that's coming up towards the end of the year. Anything else you can sort of say that we've got, should be looking forward to for the next sort of 4 months or so?
Well, we have okay. So on the browser product within the next couple of weeks, and I don't know exactly when this is going to air, but in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be launching this Sage Labs. It's a 2D environment. It's very similar to Ogame for anyone who's familiar with Ogame, but again, using all of these real on-chain mechanics. So that's coming up in the next couple of weeks. From there, our web team is focusing on a guild management platform that's nearly complete. Maybe exciting for some people, maybe not. It's very exciting for all of the guilds that are in our ecosystem. Yeah. On-chain registration, profile management, permission settings, multi-sig wallet with guild treasury management, things like that. And then in the meantime, we also have a small team right now dedicated to the core Sage product, not Labs, but the core Sage product that we're calling REC, Resource Extraction and Crafting, which is a lot of the same fundamental programs that we're using in Labs, but that's with the 3D environment. So all WebGL assets and 3D models of ships. And so we're targeting a big release of that before the end of the year as well. That would probably wrap up what we're working on the browser side. In the meantime, just I guess to restate, the R2.2 launch in showroom with this competitive combat racing, ship mastery, character progression, and ship configuration, that's our big release going into the tail end of the year.
So you've drastically cut down in size of the company over the last sort of year or so, but you're being very busy in lots of different sort of formats. I mean, if that hadn't have happened, what would be, you couldn't really be releasing much more. So I sort of struggle a little bit. If you've downsized all these people and you're still doing all this stuff, if you hadn't downsized, what would the difference be? What would be the counter example?
Ironically, and just in transparency, so we had 165 people on the team. We eliminated about 75% of that team. That was our internal team, by the way. That excludes the co-creation studios.
Oh, it does. Okay, I did wonder.
Ironically, we've actually seen velocity pick up, and I've also often referenced a podcast, Tim Ferriss. He's interviewing the CEO founder of Evernote, and in that conversation, the CEO of Evernote talks about challenges with growth and scalability of companies, and the fact that as a rubric, every time you 3x the amount of people working for you, you have to radically transform all of your procedures and communication channels. And Automata is a fully remote company. So at peak, we had 235 people working in some 24 countries around the world, primarily through Discord. So I think there were, and the fact that we went from, you know, four people to 235 over the course of a year introduced many operational inefficiencies, right? Yeah. So I think it wasn't just, you'd like to think, and I'll take blame for my own naivety that growing, adding people to a company is going to make you produce more. But I think because of all of the inefficiencies, we actually couldn't get as much done as we would have liked to or should have been able to. And so now with the smaller team, we're actually able to communicate more effectively. Everybody is focusing on one thing now, outside of a few satellite teams that are working on, again, say the Sage Rec product or the Unreal Engine team. But effectively, everybody on our team is focused on one product. Everybody's aligned on what needs to get built and how it needs to get built. And we're able to execute on that more quickly. So obviously reducing personnel isn't something I wanted to do, but I will say there is a positive byproduct in that we're working better now than we ever have before.
Yeah, I guess it is sort of interesting, particularly with the remote working as well. I mean, you can kind of see how just that you end up with half of people just managing the other people. So if you don't need so many people, you probably get rid of the managers. Back to sort of Dunbar's number or whatever it is, where everyone now knows each other rather than being random people.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's and it ends up being this game of telephone when you have too many management layers and, you know, an executive order comes down, and by the time it gets to the developer, it ends up being something that wasn't the actual idea, and then it comes back up for review. It goes through this process of coming back up to review, and you're like, no, you have to change all of this, right? So now we don't have any of that. This is what we need. Everybody knows, and everybody knows exactly what to work on, and the team is working incredibly hard right now. So a lot of credit to them, because look, there's a lot of overtime going in right now, but everybody is extremely excited about what we have coming up. So that feels really good, just to feel that passion from everybody on the team.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, again, it's sort of, again, a cliche, but sort of the byproduct of sort of building in a bear market is the only people who are there are the people who really want to be there. Everyone else, if they get the chance to leave, of course they're going to go, and this whole blockchain stuff was a complete scam, and I'll go and do something else. So the ones that are there are the ones who want to get the job done.
That's right.
Cool. Well, thank you very much, Michael. That was really good. We covered a lot of stuff there, lots of different concepts. But hopefully that was useful for people. So thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you, John. Again, it was great to catch up. Let's not wait 2 years between the next one.
Year's time. Let's put it in the diaries. Thanks to Michael. Thanks to you guys for watching, listening, however you're consuming the podcast. Every episode, we are talking to people who are you know, still here, still in the market, and I think, you know, we are seeing in 2023, in 2024, we're seeing these products that have been in development for, you know, a number of years now, finally coming to things being released. Maybe not the full product yet, but we're starting to see sort of, you know, open betas and early access builds. I'm starting to see things through, you know, the app stores, starting to see things through Epic Game Store, as Michael mentioned as well. So I think it is everything is to look forward to, really, in blockchain games. So please subscribe, and I'll see what's coming on in next week's episode. See you then. Goodbye.
Bye.